I've been called a maverick. Someone who marches to the beat of his own drum. Sometimes it's meant as a compliment, and sometimes it's not. What it really means is I understand who I work for. I don't work for a party. I don't work for a special interest. I don't work for myself. I work for you.
Just a bit from Senator John McCain's speech last night at the Republican National Convention. The balloons fell and all of the glitter was everywhere. The people were assembled. He had his 96-year-old mother sitting there, very spry for 96 years old, and he was thanking all those, his wife, his children, and his vice presidential pick. We'll talk about the Republican National Convention for the next 30 minutes of issues, et cetera. Mark Hemingway joins us. Now, I'm also interested in your impressions of the Republican National Convention. If you watched it last night, if you heard it on the radio or saw some of the coverage, I want to hear from you. We've got 25 minutes with Mark Hemingway of National Review for your questions and comments as well. 1-877-623-MYIE, 1-877-623-MYIE, or email us here in the studio on this Friday, September the 5th, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Mark Hemingway is a staff reporter for National Review, and he was there in the Twin Cities last night with the Republicans. Mark, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Did you think that the senator did what he needed to do last night, Senator McCain?
That's still very much an open question. I mean, you know, clearly McCain is not, you know, a fiery or masterful, you know, orator. But what you saw last night was very much, you know, the speech of an adult. You know, the speech of, you know, one of the most, you know, clearly one of the most important figures in American politics, you know, speaking directly to voters in a very mature way. You know, and a lot has been made about, you know, the spectacle and theatrics of this election. You know, even Wednesday night with Palin's speech, there was a lot of pizzazz there happening, and there was very little of that last night. McCain left a lot to digest. You know, he didn't wow anyone, but you know, he left a lot for people to consider. In particular, people that may not have already decided that they're voting for him.
Was he outshone in any way by his vice presidential pick and her speech the night before?
I don't think there's any question about that. Palin's speech was just, I mean, particularly for, you know, the conservative Republican base and people in attendance, and, you know, and in this, in part, isn't entirely McCain's fault. I mean, the expectations were such that, you know, with the media attacks on Palin, that she was put in a real position to, you know, exceed expectations. And her speech was just, you know, an undeniable masterstroke in a lot of ways. What she did, you know, for that crowd, what she did to put, you know, questions about her experience and other things to rest, was just, I mean, unbelievable. I mean, she just, that night, I don't think, you know, even those of us that were, you know, hoping that she would do well, I don't think any of us expected to see someone, you know, emerge from the skull of Athena, you know, fully form this, you know, major new political star the way that she did that night.
I want to come back to her in just a moment, but let's stay with Senator McCain for a second. What was the essential theme of his message last night, especially going into the next 60 days running up until the election itself?
Well, the essential theme that he arrived on was this theme of that he's a guy that's going to fight for you. And I believe that was a phrase he used, fight for you, a number of times. That's a good populist theme. It's probably right about where McCain wants to be to appeal to the people that he needs to get in terms of swing voters and other people that he hasn't already, you know, locked up, that will, you know, that he's not sure will be voting for him. You know, it's good of him to see that. You know, what's going on here is, you know, McCain harped on this theme of experience for a very long time against Obama, and that was a very effective line of attack. And what he's doing here is he's sort of pivoting. You know, McCain didn't want to be the guy going into the election that you know, simply attacked Obama on the experience issue. He wanted to make the election a little bit more about himself, to recapture some more of that maverick appeal of his and you know, be seen as someone who's compelling the swing voters in his own right and celebrate his own virtues, and that's what he's trying to do.
His speech seemed oddly devoid of what had come in some of the previous speeches, and I'm thinking here in particular Rudolph Giuliani's speech, which at the time almost had Rudolph Giuliani laughing as much as the audience, and Sarah Palin's speech as well, although she did it more masterfully, I think, than Giuliani. And that is kind of a tone of gentle mockery of the other side. I didn't hear any of that in McCain's.
Yeah, no, you didn't. There was I can't remember who it was, but there was this great moment a couple of days ago where someone asked Giuliani. They said, you know, we hear your speech is going to be, you know, full of attacks on Democrats. And Giuliani paused and looked at the reporter and said, "There will be comparisons," which was quite amusing. and indeed, you know, you saw a lot of that. I think, that kind of thing just has to happen at a convention because you need that, you know, attacks on the other side or whatever to just, you know, fire up the base and remind them, you know, why you're fighting for them. There's a very famous quote by Nietzsche that I think applies to Republicans a lot right now, which is that sometimes one remains faithful to a cause for no other reason than its opponents do not cease to be insipid. And as bad as Republicans have been the last few years, you kind of need to remind them how insipid Democrats have been on a lot of issues that matter to Republicans. That said, you know, Giuliani is, you know, very much a bare-knuckle politician, and people kind of expect that from him. I don't know if people – part of what made Palin's speech so effective is I don't know if people saw that coming from her. That she would, you know, launch all those, you know, direct attacks on Obama and be so, you know, sarcastic and some of the cutting the way that she was, you know, which was great in a lot of ways. One, because Palin could certainly get away with that sarcasm and those attacks a lot more than, say, Giuliani could, for no other reason than the attacks on her had been so vicious that I think a lot of people felt like she had earned the right to come out there and swing back. And, you know, the other thing being simply just that, you know, that's the traditional role of the vice president. You know, they're the attack dog in the presidential election. And to come out there and do what she did to reassure everybody that, you know, she could be that person that she needs to be on the campaign trail. And then, you know, all of the things that, you know, the media had just, you know, they picked up everything in the kitchen sink and they just thrown it at her. And the fact that she could, you know, come out there and, you know, land so many direct hits was just, you know, a major reassurance for Republicans.
Folks, did you watch Senator McCain's speech last night or any of the rest of the speeches given on television during the Republican National Convention? I want to hear from you. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE. Email us here in the studio on this Friday, September the 5th. Talkback@issuesetc.org. Mark Hemingway is our guest. He's staff reporter for National Review. We're talking about the Republican National Convention. The president also made a speech via video link. How did that go over?
I mean, I think it went over fine. I mean, I don't think that I don't think that it was particularly, you know, inspiring. Nor do I think that the crowd was particularly inspired by it. That said, you know, Bush still remains a popular figure within, you know, the crowd that he was addressing, which was the conservative base. Even if he's not a popular figure among, you know, much else of America. And I have to say at the end of the day, the fact that they canceled festivities on Monday, well, it's certainly not a call I would have made. You know, the fact that Dick Cheney and George Bush were not figured very prominently in the convention was probably a net plus for Republicans.
Did McCain even mention President Bush?
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday?
Yes. At the very beginning of his speech, he said some very gracious things about President Bush that I think surprised a lot of people, actually. I had a meeting while I was out in Minneapolis with Mark Salter, who is who's John McCain's right hand man and who co-writes all of McCain's books and speeches, and it was very interesting talking to him about Bush. I mean, clearly McCain and George Bush are not tight. And, you know, they're not close, you know, friends or anything like that, nor are they even people that necessarily find a lot of common cause in politics, even though they're major figures in the same party. Certainly in the last few years, especially, particularly with the surge of some other things, Bush had really come to respect McCain, and a little bit of vice versa. There's no question that immediately after 2000, there were some hard feelings about what happened in that election. With the Republican primary being as bitterly fought as it was. But McCain and for a guy that has such legendarily hot temper, and for George Bush, a guy that's legendarily insular and doesn't trust those who aren't part of his team, it became very clear that at a certain point that both of them, in the last several years, mature individuals that were trying to do the right thing, that were trying to advance the cause of the Republican Party and America at large, and buried the hatchet.
10 minutes left for your thoughts on the GOP convention and the 2008 presidential race on the other side of this break. Give us a call during this break. It's a good time to call 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or email us talkback@issuesetc.org. What's next for both of these teams? The Obama-Biden team, the McCain-Palin team, and the next 60 days for the nation. We'll talk about that with Mark Hemingway of National Review after this. Issues Etc. Regular guest, Pastor Will Wheaton on the Treasury of Daily Prayer.
All I can say is prepare to be blown away. It's something I've never seen in the whole of Lutheran liturgical history. It's a complete daily office book and so much more, and it's in a single volume.
Order an advance copy of the Treasury of Daily Prayer by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or look for the cover at our website, issuesetc.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click On Demand Audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand Audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org, and click On Demand Audio.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Friend, classmate, roommate, cousin, brother, sister, spouse. Some of these people I will never meet.
This is our time. This is our place. This is our duty to stand up for the more than 45 million members of our generation killed by legalized abortion on demand since 1973. Every day, more than 3,500 members of our generation are killed by legalized abortion on demand. Approximately 40% of all abortions each year are performed on teens and college-age women.
We are the first generation of survivors of Roe v. Wade. We are the ones who escaped death by so-called safe, legal abortion. And we have a responsibility to join in the fight to protect the most defenseless members of the next generation, unborn children.
This has been a Perspective on Life from National Teens for Life. For more information, visit our website, www.nrlc.org.
She knows where she comes from, and she knows who she works for. She stands up for what's right, and she doesn't let anyone tell her to sit down. I'm very proud to have introduced our next vice president to the country, but I can't wait until I introduce her to Washington.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Of course, Senator McCain talking about his running mate, Sarah Palin. Our call-in number with Mark Hemingway for the next 10 minutes of the program, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Susan is listening in Tupelo, Mississippi. Susan, welcome.
Thank you. I just wanted to say I'm a big fan of The Corner, National Review's The Corner. I read Mark Hemingway and others on there a lot. I was a little disheartened last night to read their initial response to McCain's speech, that that it was flat, didn't accomplish what he wanted to accomplish. I watched it at home, and I was very, very moved. One reason that I was so moved was that for the first time I heard him talk about his experience in captivity as a humiliation and as a turning point in his view of himself, that he was left with nothing but what he believed in. I found that very moving and enlightening. I had never heard that aspect. Also, I think that many of us, I consider myself part of the base, and we were so ready to have the gloves come off, not to be bloody and not to be mean, but to really counter the silliness that's coming from the other side. And Sarah Palin, I'm so happy to say Governor Palin took those gloves off, and I felt like it freed everybody else to take their gloves off as well. So,
well, Susan,
I think
thank
it's
you
a
very
real
much.
Campaign now.
All right, thank you for listening in Mississippi as well. Mark, your thoughts on her comments.
Well, first off, it's gratifying to know that she reads The Corner. For people that don't know, The Corner is sort of the group blog, or for people who work for National Review and everyone in their orbit, you know, blogs their opinions about what's going on. And as such, what you get is you get a lot of wildly different opinions. So, you know, I don't think everybody at National Review certainly thought it was flat, although a few people did say stuff to that effect. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of people were very much predisposed to liking John McCain's speech, and you know, certainly I think the thing about the speech, because it wasn't, you know, the spectacle, because it wasn't, you know, a fiery, you know, piece of oratory like Palin gave the night before or whatever, there was no, like, you know, there was no way to judge the instant reaction to it. And in a certain extent, you know, when you walk away from a major political speech, you know, not knowing how to size it up, not knowing that it was an important speech, you know, the temptation is, I think, to think that it was a little flat. So, you know, I don't know. But, you know, certainly there was a lot in that speech to digest. And certainly the part about, you know, she's about McCain talking about his time in captivity and all of that was, in fact, very moving. Now, I think what happens, perhaps, is that a lot of us in the political press corps have heard McCain, you know, talk about, you know, his timing as a prisoner of war a number of times. So hearing him talk about it one more time, you know, maybe didn't exactly have, you know, the emotional impact that it did for a lot of people who don't always follow this stuff, you know, day to day to day. But there was one interesting thing about his time, what he said about his time in captivity, where he included this line about how they broke him by, you know, torturing him in captivity, and, you know, he gave up and was rescued. And it was a very interesting line because, you know, McCain, you know, almost never, you know, tells that part of the story. You know, he wants you to believe that that he is, you know, such a man of strength and character and everything constantly that, you know, he doesn't always share the hardship that he's gone through. And I think that one of the ways that McCain's speech was, you know, perhaps the most mature of his career was that, you know, he did acknowledge in that speech that, you know, his weaknesses, he did acknowledge the fact that the Republican Party, he's not necessarily the favorite person in the Republican Party, and a lot of other, you know, there's a lot of other examples of humility.
Ann is listening in St. Louis. Ann, thank you for being patient. Welcome.
Oh, hi, and thank you for this opportunity. I think I have felt like I have had no hope for the political process or what's been going on in politics probably since 9/11. It seems like it's been going downhill. And I never gave John McCain a chance until I had to. I was a Fred Thompson supporter, and I think Fred Thompson would never have made it. But I think McCain, and with his choice of running mate, has really, hope is arising again in my human, you know, heart. I think Bush was criticized so long. I mean, it's just been a bashing for so long, and we haven't heard good things except from the Rush Limbaughs and such. So I'm just greatly motivated and hopeful, and it seems like the whole, the way Sharon, Sarah Palin faces things, it's just hopeful and positive, and this is just such a change from what we've had for so long.
Ann, thank you very much. What do you think, Mark?
I don't think there's any question about that. Palin in particular has done a lot to fire up the Republican base and make them feel better about John McCain, and you know, there's a real enthusiasm among Republicans right now, whereas there just wasn't before. I mean, you know, certainly McCain had his supporters, and certainly the country's still about 50-50, but there was a real gap in terms of intensity of support for one side or the other, you know, partly because McCain is such a known quantity, and a lot of what Republicans have historically known about McCain, they haven't necessarily liked. The way he cuts against his own party and sort of rejects certain conservative instincts. So, you know, that's really good to hear that, you know, Republicans, you know, have that enthusiasm back for a lot of people. But, I mean, I don't want to throw too much cold water on things because a lot could happen between now and November. But I think the fact of the matter is that, you know, structurally, conditions in this race still very much favor Obama, although, you know, certainly I don't want to denigrate McCain's chances, but, you know, Obama's still leading in the polls, and there's still a number of reasons to think that he has the edge heading into the election right now.
Well, Martha emails us saying we of the conservative base are psyched because of Palin. We are resigned to holding our noses and voting for McCain. And I guess since she echoes Ann's call so much there, I wonder whether or not Palin can certainly be a game changer for McCain. He can be this kind of boost to his campaign. Can she win an election for him? Is he counting on her to win an election for him?
I doubt he's counting on her to win an election for him. I mean, I think it's probably a combination of, you know, certainly he needs her enthusiasm and fundraising, and that will help bring people out of the polls. But I think, you know, you have to count on Obama, you know, not doing so well in the debates, and there's a lot of reasons to think that he won't. He just hasn't done well in a lot of the debates before. But, you know, the conventional wisdom has been that this election is all about Obama. People will, you know, accept or reject Obama, and you know, that will be what decides the race. McCain will barely factor in, and I still think there's some of that, although, you know, certainly Palin gives people more of an affirmative reason to vote for McCain rather than simply accepting or rejecting Obama. But there's also, you know, naturally we've been talking a lot about the 1980 scenario where Reagan got elected, where there was this guy that, you know, was a relative unknown and people weren't sure about him. And what happened is in the last, you know, month or so, people just decided that over the course of the campaign that they'd seen him enough and they'd gotten comfortable enough with him that he just sort of surged ahead and won. And there's a very real possibility of thinking about happening with Obama.
Okay, with only about 10 seconds for each of these responses, what mistakes does the Obama-Biden ticket need to avoid? And same question for the McCain-Palin ticket. About 20 seconds to respond.
Okay, well, Obama needs to not do well. I mean, he needs to avoid not doing well in the debates. He's a terrible speaker extemporaneously, and you know, for whatever his gifts are as a speaker, he does terrible in debates and things like that. Similarly, Joe Biden is a gaffe machine. He's already said a number of things in the campaign trail since they picked him up that I would classify as stupid, and says a few more things like that that, you know, rise above the media din, and that can be a real problem. As for McCain and Palin, I think that McCain needs to get Palin out there in front of the press so they can establish her credibility very quickly. It sounds like immediately following her appearance, they've squirreled her away to start prepping her, even though the media is angry about that and wants to get a hold of her and you know, make sure that she's qualified. You know, hiding her away is going to, you know, cause this media narrative that she's too inexperienced to set in.
Is it a new ball game, yes or no, for John McCain and his running mate now?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. For two reasons. One is that, you know, like I said, you know, Palin gives people, especially conservatives, an affirmative reason to vote for McCain. Whether or not swing voters will decide that they like Palin is still an open question, and those are the people that McCain needs to win over. And the other reason is because, you know, McCain has clearly signaled that the experience argument against Obama has run its course and that they're going to try and appeal to people on their own merits. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Mark Hemingway is a staff reporter for National Review. Mark, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks for having me again. I really enjoyed it.
You will find some links to Mark's columns on the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Some great shows next week on Issues Etc. We'll talk to Elliot Miller about yoga, Pastor Peter Bender on the Apostles' Creed, Dr. Christian Smith about the religious and spiritual lives of American teachers. I'm Todd Wilkin. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.